You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hey there, this is Aaron. Welcome to Reading Writers. With me today is Ronnie Martin. Ronnie is one of the co-hosts of the Happy Rant podcast. He is the pastor of Substance Church in Ashland, Ohio, and he is the co-author of a number of books with Ted Kluck. And Ronnie, am I missing anything?
No, I think you about summed it up. I also wrote a book of my own called Stop Your Complaining last year, but that would be the only thing you missed with my co-writing stuff.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
So
Thank you.
It is.
Let's talk The Bridezilla of Christ, which I think is one of my favorite titles of the year. Why was this an important book for you to co-author?
Well, you know, it kind of sprung out of some events in my life where, I experienced some difficult things from a church that I'd come out of. And then I was talking to Ted about it one day. We were just sort of sitting around talking about things. And, you know, he had had some similar experiences. And so I just came up with the idea of, what if we, you know, is anybody writing about this? What, you know, this idea of the church being this safe place, this is where we go to find our, you know, a sense of security. And yet you really, what you find is that everybody has a story of being damaged by somebody in their church, and maybe a story of even how you've damaged somebody in the church. And it just there's all kinds of implications to that. So I said, hey, why don't we write about it? And I just came up with the title right in the moment. And you know, he liked it. And so we just thought, you know, we both kind of have some shared experiences in this. So why don't we see what we can come up with, see what we can write and contribute to this, you know, particular topic. So,
yeah, definitely wanting to be a place where people who have been banged up, where people can feel safe. That is super important. How do you think practically we can encourage people who have had those experiences, like you and Ted have, like so many others have, to not give up on the church?
Yeah, I think part of that is just, you know, if you you have to take into consideration the fact that we've been damaged against, we've probably done some of the damaging. And again, we're talking about things of which are at a level to which, you know, we can enter back into the church, or we can sit down with people and we can really try to resolve some of these things. I mean, there are different kinds of pain that require different levels, you know, of counseling, and maybe the level of damage is such that you need to move on to another church. And so we more dealt with things that could be easily, a little more easily defined and easily handled, but yet still maybe leave you with some deep wounds. So I don't know, the encouragement there is just to remember that, you know, if you've been sinned against, you're also a sinner that's been sinned against. And I think it's important for us to have that openness about ourselves and not be so willing to, sink into the damage that maybe we've suffered under, and be willing to try to move forward towards reconciliation, you know, and sit down with people that have maybe sinned against us, and, you know, just be willing to, you know, take some ownership in that and be prayerful about it, and not try to look at the church as being a place that you can never enter the front doors of again because you encountered some sinners. Because that's what the church is, you know?
Totally. On that same note, I know a lot of people who have had some kind of bad experience to varying degrees. There's this real temptation to lone wolf it. So to just say, you know what, it's just going to be me and Jesus, as the book title from the 90s went, they love Jesus, but not the church, that kind of thing.
Right.
What are the dangers of that? I mean, how would you encourage someone who is in that place or is tempted to pull back a little bit more?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question. I think there's a lot of, you know, validity to the question in and of itself. I think one of the dangers that I've seen with lone wolfisms, if we can call it that, is that it feels like it's the first step towards your actual relationship with Christ starting to become a lone wolf and sliding. It seems like that's the first step towards that sliding as well. So, you know, the Lord created and built the church to be a community of people. And I think anytime we try to think we can pull ourselves outside of his original design, we're going to find that we're in danger of probably much greater things than we would have if we just stay with the people that have the potential of hurting us and damaging us. because I think God uses those instances. I mean, one of the things we deal with in the book is how God used those, you know, some of those, you know, traumas in our lives to grow us, to draw us closer to Him, to make us more dependent on Him instead of coming to a situation and just, you know, rejecting mankind, you know, altogether.
Totally.
And I think lone wolfing it is just it's a dangerous step, and it's the first step towards having a Christian life that's going to lose its vitality.
I know it's usually bad form in counseling type scenarios to say, well, here's a book for you to read. But how do you think books can help people who have been hurt or who are hurting or who have maybe realized just how much hurt they themselves have caused? How can books help them stay healthy or regain a sense of health? And do you have any that you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I think that whenever we're suffering from pain or disillusionment, or, you know, it's turned into things like anger, I think that, you know, it creates a fog in our lives. And many times we get really fixated on the problem. And I think when that happens, we end up just becoming very narrow in how we begin looking at what's really going on. So I think books are always really good for that. I think they can broaden our perspective. They can sort of broaden our horizons. They can give us categories to help us understand how we're feeling and maybe why we're feeling that way. And so I think it's always, you know, I think as believers, it's a good thing for us to be reading books. I think it really, really helps broaden our theology and our doctrine and our perspective on things. And so, you know, that it's a good exercise for us. I mean, regardless of the thing that we're going through. And I'm trying to think of books that I would recommend. I mean, I know authors that have sort of delved into some of these things would be guys like Paul Tripp, I think, have probably, you know, written some good things on this. I think Piper has written some things on this, but no title comes to mind, so mm-hmm. You know, maybe you can come up with something instead of me.
It is a tough thing, right? Like, because I mean, in that category, typically the only books that exist, I mean, I think one of the closest ones that I've seen that's on the positive stick with the local church side is Why We Love the Church. Yeah. that Ted co-authored with Kevin DeYoung. And I mean, that one's a super honest book. You know, you get this sense that it's like, okay, no one's pretending that, you know, everything at the church is great all the time. But there isn't this sense of, okay, I quit. I just want to be done with it, or do church in my living room or something like that. And,
right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. And again, I remember having that talk with Ted when we were sort of, you know, coming up with the concept and we're fleshing that out a little bit. And I mean, that's definitely a book that came to mind. I said, hey, how would you feel about this almost being like a follow-up to that in some ways, where you wrote about why you love the church, and now you're writing about why you need to maybe regain your love for the church after coming, you know, on the heels of something that was difficult for you. And so, yeah, I definitely think that that's a great resource for sure.
A little more broadly, let's talk about your own reading habits and the rhythm of your life. Because I mean, you've got a lot of irons in the fire, right? I mean, you've got your day-to-day responsibilities as a pastor. You've got your hour a week with the Happy Rant guys, and then I'm sure whatever kind of nightmarish text things you can get sucked into with right. Those guys as well.
Let's be honest, that hour with the rant is the most important thing I do all week. Let's keep that square.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm sure those guys will be glad to hear that. Got, you know, family, you know, all these other things. How does reading fit into your life, and what does your routine look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it for me, it's just it's a slow and steady routine. So you know, I have a stack of books, and I have many stacks of books, you know, it's kind of scattered around the house. Mm-hmm. And I just, for me, it's just, you have to make time for it. You have to do it. I usually start in the morning. I do some personal devotional stuff, and then I usually grab something that, you know, at least one of maybe two or three books that I'll be reading at a time, and I'll grab it and I'll get through a couple of chapters, and then I'll just carry on with my day. And if I have some time later on in the day or late in the afternoon or early evening, I'll grab something else that sort of maybe fits the mood a little bit more of the day. And then I'll just, you know, read a couple chapters. But I'm not one of these, you know, I'm not one of these Al Mohler guys where I read like, you know, 7 books before 9 a.m. and, you know, or whatever they said his pattern was with mm-hmm. that. But yeah, so I to me, it's just slow and steady and I just have a constant diet of it rather than just, you know, nobody's heard from me in 3 days because I've been trying to finish a, you know, I've been trying to finish a, you know, a book. Mm-hmm. So I'd be more of a slow and steady guy for sure.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's good. With your slow and steady, is it slow and steady focusing on one? Is it picking through a bunch of them that are on your pile, or what does that look like?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I used to be sort of the read, the, like, don't get to the second book until you finish the first one you're reading. And then I found that it's just like in the last probably 5-6 years of my life, it's just been more, it's been actually easier for me to finish books if I have more than one on the go, mm-hmm. because I feel like sometimes I get bored when I'm reading. And, you know, you get to that place in every book where you're like, okay, it's chapter 6 and it's starting to sound really similar to chapter 5. And which is fine because it's just reemphasizing, you know, points that need to be reemphasized. But for me, that's a good time for me to be able to grab something else and just to have that variety.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I usually probably have no more than like 2 to 3 books going at a time because I'm not a wizard and I can't do that much. And I usually end up finishing them, or sometimes I'll skip ahead too. So I'm not somebody that has to say I read every word of every chapter. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I'll look through and there's some things I want to get to that I know where they're heading, and I'll skip to the last couple of chapters and feel like I wrapped it up. So I'm a little I keep it loose in that end too.
See, that's an interesting thing. No one so far in every conversation I've had on this show, no one has brought up that point yet, that when you're reading a book, like, yes, it's cool. It's cool to abandon a book that you're done with, or, you know, you just kind of hate it. But the notion that, you know, you can actually just go and read the pieces that you need, that actually can be a helpful thing. Why is that so helpful?
Well, you know, I think time is always a commodity, and, you know, it's not a general practice for me. I always try to get through an entire book, but mm-hmm. I feel like maybe, you know, sometimes you're reading books and you're finding that, not that something can just be not helpful, but maybe for where you're at in the moment, it's not incredibly helpful. So maybe it's something you'll revisit down the road, but for right now, you've locked into a particular book for a reason. There's certain things and maybe certain expectations that you're trying to draw from it. And so, you know, when you read the chapter headings, you can kind of get an idea of you know, what you're trying to, what you're trying to gain from that actual book. And so for me, I just find it really helpful. Rather than getting bogged down and then putting it down and then never revisiting it, I can kind of weed through some chapters in the middle and then maybe get to some ending chapters. You know, I just recently did this with Desiring God. So I'm one of these really, really weird guys that had never read Desiring God. I tried a few times years ago, put it down, tried again. And so I kind of made a commitment this year. You know, you got to get through that book. And I did for the most part. And there was a middle chapter in it, and I can't even remember the chapter. It was good, but I just felt like, you know, this is not hitting me right now. And so I got to the very, very end. And that just really, it was such a great thing for me. And I really took a lot from that because I happened to be preaching on suffering and he talked about joy and suffering. So it was actually really timely for me in terms of what I was going to be doing on Sundays. And then I kind of wrapped the book up. And so there's gaps. There was gaps in my reading, but I felt like, well, you kind of got through it because you've never even gotten to chapter 2 in the last, you know, 12 years.
Yeah.
So that was something that was just helpful. You know, you got to skip through it and, but get the general gist or sentiment behind it, which is helpful, you know?
Yeah, I think there are a lot more people who haven't actually read Desiring God than, I mean, although you don't want to say that too loud at Bethlehem Pastors Conference or at TGC, you might have someone set up an intervention or something like
that. Yeah, in our tribe, it's like saying, I've never read the Bible or Desiring God. You know, it's like pick which one you want to say you've never read and then incur the wrath of whoever you're around. You know, it's almost unheard of. You know?
So I think we've hit on some of this, but before we get to this question, there's one other question. Paper or pixels?
Oh man, I'm still a paper guy. Yeah, I don't have an iPad. I had an iPad. I got rid of it. I never used it. My wife has a Kindle, but I don't have one. I really don't care personally. So I'm not one of these guys that's going to campaign for paper. Mm-hmm. But I like it. I like paper. I like stacks of books. It's mm-hmm. just what it feels real to me. And I'm kind of an analog guy. So you know, paper feels like. I like the smell of it and the feel of it. And I've tried to read through my wife's Kindle before, and it took her a while to get used to it because she's just an avid reader, and it took her a while, but she loves it now. I just don't think I've given myself any time to get used to it, so I'm still, you know, paying millions of dollars a year for books. So that's where I'm at, so.
I keep going back and forth.
Okay.
I actually find I read faster with paper.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing.
Are there certain kinds of books that you buy only on Kindle versus paper? What's your formula for that?
Just to be completely honest, I hardly ever buy any books. I mean, these days, that's the beauty of occasionally of being a somewhat consistent book reviewer is people just send you stuff. So it's sort of the dream for book lovers/hoarders.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, but I mean, when it comes to what I'll buy digitally, I'll tend to get something in that format that I know I'm not going to want to read again. Like I can look at it and it's like, all right, this is totally a one and done. I know I'm not gonna need to go through it a second time or anything.
Yeah,
like
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Because then I can just forget that I even have it, and that's okay. But there are certain books that, although there have been books that I've purchased a Kindle edition of or an iBooks edition, and I've been really surprised because it's like, okay, I actually want to have a physical copy of this to give to someone else.
No kidding. Yeah.
That kind of thing,
yeah.
Too. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
But when it comes to, this is probably the opposite of a lot of people, but generally speaking, if it's a commentary or some sort of very thick, heavy theological tome, I will go digital every time on that.
Interesting.
And, yeah. And the reason for that is I want it in my logo system. I don't want it on my bookshelf.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
So,
no, that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of guys would actually, I think, go the opposite. They want that big, heavy, I know it's going to be here in 100 years when I'm not alive, you know, volume sitting up in my library, you know, kind of a thing. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's probably changing though. You know, definitely easier to put it in your Logos and you got it whenever you need it. And so it makes a lot of sense for sure.
Yeah, totally. Next question. How do you find reading helps you as a writer, as a creative individual, and as a pastor?
Well, it definitely broadens you. I mean, it would be hard. I think it would be hard to be a writer if you weren't a reader. You know, you wouldn't have an incredibly wide pool of thoughts and words and ideas, I think, to draw from. I think reading creates new ideas. You know, as a writer, I think reading, you know, other material creates new ideas in your own head as to what to maybe write next. It's so funny because you'll be reading something, right? You'll be reading a chapter and you'll read something and you'll think, well, that's interesting. That was just a line and they didn't flesh that out at all. It was just something to attach one point to another point. And so sometimes you'll think like, that would be a great blog, or that could be a great chapter of a book, or that could be a great book in and of itself. Or, you know, in terms of sermon prep, you know, there's, you know, you can draw a lot. It's funny how the Lord works in that when you're preparing things, it seems like you happen to be reading a lot of stuff that's really applicable to the things you're preparing. So there's a lot, you can draw a lot from that because I like using, you know, I don't go overboard with it, but I like getting other people's perspectives. I like, you know, I like having some quotes in there, you know, with the sermon, just to have somebody else say something that I'm saying a little bit better, a little clearer, with a little different perspective. I mean, you don't get that by not reading. And I mean, I guess you can these days, right? Because we can just, you know, Google those things.
Yeah, but it's not as, you're not owning that other perspective though. You know, in the quick fix too. Like there's that really beautiful thing where it's like you get to sit with something that, you know, like maybe one of those sentences that you're talking about that, and you get to just let it stew in your mind and you get to think about it for a good long while, and then figure out if there's actually something there too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So last, most important question of the day, what are the types of books that you just really dig reading, you can't get enough of, and what are a couple of those ones that are rocking your socks right now?
I think in the last X number of years, I've become a preaching book junkie. So I love reading books on preaching. So I tend to get my hands on all of those and read all of those. And so that's been something I've enjoyed a lot over the past X number of years. So I'm always looking for preaching books. I'm trying to think here. Whenever somebody asks me this, I always blank out. I do like reading some biographies. I do like that as well, although I'm not reading a lot of those right now, as many as I wish I was. And you know, the thing is, I'm a huge fiction fan, mm-hmm. but I've not been on a fiction kick now for a long time. So I've been lacking that in my reading diet. And that's something I want to get back into, but I feel like with limited time for reading and making it all count, you know, I've turned into one of those guys that, you know, I'm turning into one of those, you know, Johnny's a dull boy, he's only reading, you know, theology or, you know, things that sort of tie in with that, you know.
Yep.
So I want to broaden back to some fiction. I got a small stack of fiction stuff that I've been trying to get to. And then I'm just a weird guy. You've heard me on the rant. I like Christmas romance books and just stuff that probably a lot of dudes out there like, but they're too ashamed to say. And so I do like just really short, really, you know, kind of sentimental stories as well. I really love books like that. So,
oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So do with that what you will.
All right. Well, I guess first question is what is one of the preaching books that you found really helpful that you've read recently?
Okay, so I read, let me see here, you know, Keller came out with his preaching book. I thought it was good. He's a very, very different preacher than I am. So I thought, you know, some of it I thought was pretty applicable. One of my favorite preaching books is a book, I think it's just called Preach. It's by Mark Dever and Greg mm-hmm. Gilbert.
Yeah, that one's great.
Yeah, I just thought it doesn't get a lot of play, right? You don't got a lot of people talking about that one ever. I've never even heard anybody talk about that one, but it was so simple in how they wrote it and just sort of the things they emphasized. Because sometimes you read these preaching books, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's like you want me to write a thesis every week for my sermon. I can't do that, you know. Like I got like 30 minutes. What, you know, I can't cover like everything that needs to be covered in the entire world, you know, to go through this passage. And so, you know, a lot of those expositional preaching books feel that way. They feel overwhelming. But that Dever Gilbert book was just – that was the first one I read years ago where I thought, okay, so finally they've simplified the process for me. And so that one was really helpful. And I feel like I just read one or two since the Keller book that I just can't remember. There's been some new Alec Motyer. I don't
something like that. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I'm like butchering it right now.
Yeah,
O T Y E R. So I read his, and that was good. And then there's some preaching books that I haven't been able to get through that I'm mm-hmm. that I got. I'm looking right now at Preaching by Jason Meyer. Mm-hmm. I haven't read that one yet, and I haven't read Brian. Is it Chapel or Chappell?
It's Brian Chapel.
Brian Chapel, yeah. Christ Center Preaching. I haven't gotten to that one. I got that one on the stack.
Yep.
So yeah, that's. I've been geeking out on that.
Nice.
Recently, and then just getting ready to. Of course, you know the season is upon us, Aaron. So I'm getting ready to dive into some Christmas books. My favorite, probably my favorite book of all time. My favorite story of all time is probably Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Nice.
So I read that every year. Of course, that's not a long story. You can read that in about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually read that during the season as well. So I always love that.
Excellent. Oh man, that's great. Okay, so yeah, it's good to hear. It's again, just like how it's good to hear that there are other people who have who are admitting to not reading Desiring God, it's also good to hear someone say, hey, you know what? I haven't read Brian Chappell's book yet.
I know. It's like there's no sense in not being honest about these things. There's a lot of books out there. You're never going to be able to read all of them. And so I feel like I got to be, you know, I want to be choosy about what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. But then I'm very sentimental with books too. So I like reading things that kind of put me in a nostalgic mood or, you know, especially around the holidays. So I always have lots of space for that when it gets to this time of the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as well as all the other stuff that is sounds a little tedious and dull and maybe a little boring, you know, so.
That's all right. All right. So now help me understand the appeal of I'm trying to think of how you described it, the kind of sentimental romancy type books.
Yeah. So what's the appeal? That's a good question. So for me, it's kind of one of it's okay. So my mom and my sister, you know, somebody's going to kill me for this, but whatever, it's all out on the table. So they grew up reading this, you know, this author named Jeanette Oak back in the 70s and the 80s. And she is like the queen of Christian country romance. And so these books were literally just laying around the house all the time growing up for me. And so eventually I just grabbed one of them and I started reading them. And I like, they're great stories. She's a great storyteller. You know, she's a great writer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whether you love the sentimentality of those stories or not, they're really well written. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of got into reading those, and just developed kind of a love, because I, you know, I'm a simple guy and I like love stories, you know. And so I just developed kind of a love for things like that. So now when I read books like that, which believe it or not is a lot less than I did back in the day, but I do like, in terms of that particular genre, I like the Christmas end of those things. So I like those kinds of Christmas novels that you get around this time of the year. And so, you know, I don't like all of them, but there's a couple of authors that I like that I generally like to read. A guy named Richard Paul Evans, I really like him. And so I usually, you know, these are guys that like write these books every year. So I usually buy a couple of these a year and read them. And you know, as I'm working on my own right now as well. So, I mean, there you go. There it is. There all out in the open, you know, you all the jokes, all the laughing. There it is.
Yeah. Hey, there's only minimal judgment on that. So
only minimal.
Only, it's very minimal.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, keep in mind though, I'm the guy who's consistently advocating for comic books. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah, so it's okay.
There's a hipster quality to comic books. There's no hipster quality to Christian Christmas country romance.
Not yet. Not yet. If you write that, bind it in leather, then you're set, right?
Problem is, I don't think any publisher is going to bind it in leather. But that's a great point, though. If we could get them to bind it in leather, I think we would add we'd add some credibility to it.
Absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely. So. All right, Ronnie, I think that's a great place for us to leave off. I'm not sure we can reach a higher height.
Hands off that one. Huh?
Yeah. So Ronnie, thanks for being on the show. And listeners, if you're not already listening to The Happy Rant, be sure you do. Definitely pick up a copy of Bridezilla of Christ. And, you know, be sure to follow Ronnie as well on Twitter at Ronnie J. Martin, and that's Ronnie with an IE, not a Y. I have no idea who you'll find if you use a Y. So
probably just, a woman. Yeah.
Entirely possible. But so Ronnie, thanks again, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks, man. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Reading Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review and a rating on iTunes. Your reviews help other people find the show. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronStrongarm. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/bloggingtheologically. And for more content, please visit bloggingtheologically.com. I'm Aaron Armstrong, and I'll be back next week with a new episode of Reading Writers.